VentureCast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's really fun about that kind of act is it like tips over beyond inauthentic into authenticity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, it's totally.
It's just a group of guys that they're like, you work for us, silence. The producers give them the songs, they teach them the dance, and then the production is so weird. Like, there's no art to it at all. Like, it's just the purest commerce. It's amazing. It's like enjoying like a McDonald's burger. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It's been hyper engineered for the people who like it. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's a perfect description. And if you haven't had a McDonald's burger in 20 years, you're like, I remember why I ate these.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
How are you here at the turn of the century? It is 1999. We're looking at the best album of 1999. Ben Barton, how are you feeling going into this new century?
Oh, I'll tell that with my album selection. I have a whole story about that.
Okay. How are you feeling, Jeff?
I had the most relaxing day I've had since the year began. I slept in a little bit. I drank coffee. I ate a donut. I mean, I have had a lovely day.
Living in the lap of luxury.
I have worked 14 or 15 hour days, Saturday and Sunday included, for like 22 or 23 days in a row. And today was the opposite. And I literally feel, I haven't been this relaxed in a while.
This is a great podcast.
I'm gonna be talking all slow, and whatever you guys think is cool with me. It's gonna be great.
I'll tell you what, Ben. This brings us. We don't really do pre-production meetings here at the 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old White Guys podcast. We do that for the people. They can hear the notes. They can hear things being made.
That's so professional of us. People love
it. So professional. They love it. And thoughts on going to every other week in the 21st century. So we've got another 22, 23 years to go. We've been cranking them out every Wednesday. Do you guys want to change and drop it every other week or keep going at this pace?
I serve at the pleasure of the podcast president, and I would like to fulfill the will of the people. So I'm open. I'm open to suggestion.
I have a question. I feel like, Timmy, doesn't the strategic planning department, don't we have like a mission statement that they're crafting for us right now, and then items to go along with that?
We should
replace this podcast scenario with just our strategic planning. We should have, we should do it every other week, but it's just us talking about whether we should do it every other week.
And right.
That'll take us through to 2024.
Well, that's true. That could be a special episode is us talking about when we're going to do it. That would be a pretty exciting episode.
The different committees that we would have to form to discuss the different elements.
Be like the Beatles movie. It'll be like a 7-hour podcast where we talk about our business. Hey, Tim, where are you tonight, my friend?
You noticed this is not the basement. This is the Hampton Inn in Bermuda Run, North Carolina.
Bermuda Run, like it's in Run by Bermuda, or it's the name
I'm
of the town?
Sure, I meant to get on Wikipedia and figure out why it's called Bermuda Run, because it's
nowhere, also not on the water, right?
Not at all. It's in Winston-Salem.
Wow.
My youngest daughter has a volleyball tournament. You know, I'm the coach of her team. Big tournament tomorrow. We're getting focused here in the lime green room 124.
Yep.
Wait, I love you just told everybody like the town, the room, the hotel. This is how you
it's
get
gonna be days. It's going to come out in a week. You think they're going to send the Bloodhounds to chase Timmy back to Asheville from there?
Have you not seen Play Misty for Me? You got to be careful, man.
God. All right. Well, in 1999, we are going to get to the music here. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited because the Grammys are kind of on fire. We had Bob Dylan. We had Lauryn Hill. Let's see if they can make it three in a row.
It's the Grammy winner.
Supernatural by Santana.
Is that enough? Do you want to keep going? I'll do a little more. I feel like that's enough.
Plenty, gracious plenty. So was there any other song from this particular album? I mean, that was a
there was another
monster,
hit for this record, right?
Monster.
Oh
hit.
Yeah, there's a bunch, I think. I really? Just I've let them fall out the back of my head. I don't know.
Good call. Like,
there's a bunch of big guests. COVID denier Eric Clapton is on here. Half of the Dave Matthews Band. Remember Everlast? Remember those guys?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Everlast makes an appearance. Lauryn Hill and CeeLo are on a track.
Wow. Well, yeah. let me ask you, Carlos Santana, I know nothing about his career. is he a good guy? Bad guy? Nice chum? What's going on?
Nice chum. My favorite Carlos Santana story, a friend of mine went to high school in Marin County. Uh-huh. And they brought Carlos to speak to the whole school about not doing drugs and how bad drugs are for you. Carlos showed up as high as a kite to deliver the speech and just kind of coherently mumbled about, you know, like music. And you can see music when you really concentrate. People were like, wow, drugs sound like they might be pretty mind expanding and awesome.
Really sound pretty cool.
I have a pretty big soft spot for the earlier stuff. Oye Como Vas, like, was one of my absolute all time favorites. And by the way, for guys our age, a mixtape for a lady, Oye Como Va, really hit the sweet spot.
No kidding.
For sure. Oh, yeah. And Samba Pati, you put those two back to back, and you're like, you get the fast and the slow, and you're like, you know, that's just kind of how I do it.
I did not know that. All right. Well,
my favorite, if you don't know anything about Santana, which I can't imagine anybody but Tim in our listening pool is in that position. But then, for me, the place to start is the Woodstock performance of Soul Sacrifice by the original Santana Band with a 17-year-old Michael Shreve on drums. He just absolutely destroys it. And it's super exciting and great. And but they fall off a cliff pretty quickly. And there's way more terrible Santana music than there is good Santana music. He's the Burt Reynolds of classic rock.
Oh,
I would argue.
I'll like take that.
A few really, really high moments, and then just like 27 records that are like Stick and Stroker Ace. And
oh my God, we've got to have the Burt Reynolds good movie, bad movie punch off at some point. Not yet.
It won't take long.
Hey, I do think, so this is the 1999 podcast. I want the year 2000 podcast to be a reset for our listeners because we haven't had a new person put in a rating in a while, a new person put in a review. We've got 55 ratings. I think we need some more. In the first, 10 hours of a podcast dropping, we have 200 regular listeners getting our podcast. Guess what? Year 2000, I'm not going to drop it at 8 a.m. I'm going to drop it at 10 a.m. And those people are going to be like, wait, what? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is when we're going to rate the podcast. This is when we're going to give a new review.
This is where we're going to give a one-star for Timmy's trying to be.
Where's my podcast?
F that guy.
I do love the Pavlovian approach to
that's cruel. You're going to punish them.
Review acquisition. That is awesome.
All right. The year 2000. Oh, gosh. So many news stories. Clinton.
Well, we're in 1999 again, right?
Not sorry. The year 2000. I know. Okay. I'm jumping ahead. Time travel. 1999. It's the Y2K scare. Good times. Clinton goes on trial, but is not convicted after his impeachment in the House. JFK Jr. dies, which takes him out of the running for the Who Died game, which is back with a vengeance. The people, not a lot of fans of Today in Tort Law, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also, by the way, you should say JFK Jr. allegedly died.
That's true.
There's some folks in Dallas waiting right now for him to come back.
I was actually afraid you were about to like reveal him as the mystery guest. I thought this we were about to find out your Q it's himself, you know. Like
I still don't understand how the folks who align themselves with QAnon somehow think a Kennedy is gonna come back and lead them forward.
You're not doing sufficient research, my friend.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's all very clear if you just, you know, stay up to date on the materials.
Connect the dots.
Yep.
And also, like, if that's the single thing, you're like, everything else is totally legit. That was the one that puzzled me. And I'm worried about you.
I just got a little hang up with this last step. Everything else, sure.
Oh, fantastic.
In the year 1999... The Sopranos debuts.
Oh, yeah.
I, in the first season, went with West Wing over Sopranos. But you two are the real TV aficionados. Sopranos versus The Wire. Which one are you bringing to your desert island? You can't bring both.
The Wire.
The Wire, easily. That's an easy one. But I mean, if it's Sopranos versus West Wing, I mean, come on. That's...
West Wing.
Like Tony would go in there and beat all those people half to death, and I'd be rooting for him. It's awesome.
You get a lot
Indian
more.
Indian Cannon is right now rewatching The Sopranos. The Sopranos is great. That's not a diss on The Sopranos, but The Wire is an unbelievable singular achievement.
Yep. We're watching The Wire right now, and it's spectacular so far.
Yeah,
and it's going to get better or worse. Yeah,
what season are you in?
Season one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, dude, wait till you get to the school season. The school
Season four is like Nobel Prize level television.
Just wow.
As good as television gets.
Okay. So you're both.
And then season five is the newspaper season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Season five is the worst qualitatively against the other ones, but it's the funniest one because Simon was a reporter at the Baltimore Sun. And season five takes place in a newsroom and he basically recreates all the people he didn't like at work and then backs a bus over them on national TV.
It's really unbelievable.
And he's like, they did interviews with people who worked with them then. And they were like, well, is it a version of it? They're like, oh no, it's not a version. It's a reproduction of actual meetings that happened with people he didn't like where he shows what jerks they are. Can you imagine how much fun it would be to be able to go backwards in life and create a TV season based around people you hated burying them?
I cannot wait for my second podcast. All right. moving right along.
Nevin Fedge. Yeah.
Terrible, terrible avalanche in Austria in 1999. A whole village just gets buried. 31 people die. But over 30 people are rescued from the snow. In fact, one dog rescues 26 people. Just working with search teams, one dog saves the lives of 26 people, which brings us to our new segment. Ben, how is the puppy? Because dogs are incredible. Everyone loves dogs.
You're the worst, Tim. That was so uncalled for. It was really mean. We grade on a curve here at the law school. So you can't be like, here's the world's most amazing dog. How's your dog doing? That was a tough get. I'm going to object on Romeo's behalf that you're comparing him to a guy, enough dog that saved 27 other people.
Romeo's out in the snow in Knoxville, just looking for people to save.
I won't belabor the Romeo point at all, but I will say that I had a meltdown with Romeo and my beloved wife yesterday, and she took care of him all day today to give me a break. That's basically where we're at now.
What's going on? I don't want the viewers to think you're not a skilled dog owner. You actually are, of people I know, pretty adept at the dog training. Like Ben's one of those people who after a year, the dog like needs no leash. sits right at his ankles. Like, he's usually that like dog whisperer guy. So what is going on?
Romeo's
well,
too
we've
smart.
Had a, Indy and I have had a long-standing discussion about there was nature versus nurture with the two other dogs that we had. And it appears it was nature. Because this dog is a challenge. It's a challenge. Basically, he's a smart dog, and that's no good. You don't want a smart dog. This dog carefully considers whether to obey me to the point where he's like, I've had five of those treats. You know what I mean?
Done.
Yeah, you know, like, my friend Billy, who I think is a listener of the podcast, got a border collie after owning a golden retriever. And I was at his house once, and he just looked at it. He looked at his dog. He's like, hey. And the dog like went wide-eyed and ran and closed his crate with his paw. And he was like, see, if I use that tone, he knows we're going to the vet. The dog was so unbelievably smart. He built this like, he built this Rube Goldberg machine in his backyard so the dog could get a treat that had like 11 steps. And it took the dog like 3 hours to master it. So yeah, it was like living with a graduate student.
Oh man. Yeah, my dog can jump. That's about it. All right. 1999, Jeff Simon's Napster is created. And you partook in Napster, I suppose.
Yeah. I never loved Napster though, because, the files were so sloppy and like, you never knew what you were going to get. Like every once in a while you'd find something like, oh great, an old record that's out of print. But most of the time, like, you download something and just be like all glitchy or horrible sounding, like the total lack of quality control and the kind of free for all nature of it kind of turned me off a little bit.
So he wasn't a music guy. He was just a computer guy.
I don't know. I really don't know much about him actually. Sean Fanning. Is that his name?
I thought it was Sean Parker.
Sean Parker.
Sean Parker.
Who's Fanning? Who's a Fanning? I'm looking up Napster Fanning while Ben talks about Napster.
I wasn't a fan. That's all.
His name was Sean Fanning, not Sean Parker.
Who's Sean Parker?
Sean Parker's the name that they use in the stupid movie.
Right. Thank you very much. Sean Parker is the name of Justin Timberlake's character in The Social Network, right?
That's what it is. That's why I was fooled too.
No, Sean Parker is someone.
I'm sure there's a Sean Parker. They should rate the podcast at 8 a.m. before the 10 a.m. drop.
That was good. That was like me. All right. In 1999, Boris Yeltsin resigns. A youngish Vladimir Putin steps in. Ben, how would you rate Vladimir Putin's career as the leader of Russia so far?
A+, 5 stars. He's done a magnificent job. Can't wait for more.
Wow. Okay. Jeff?
He has tapes of me.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I've never been so overwhelmed by the sight of a shirtless man on a horse in my life. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's something that we don't do in the United States too much. John Kerry was in a wetsuit.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt had, I'm sure, a couple of like horse early photographs or paintings, right?
Oh, and there were some George W. pictures on the ranch where he
that's
like,
true
a white t-shirt working
yeah
it out.
He looked a
yeah
little
cut chopping some wood yep no
did
doubt
you guys
about it.
Have you read River of Doubt yet?
No.
Okay, we'll talk about that later then. All right, let's get to the number one selling album of 1999. Hit it.
It's the number one album,
Millennium by Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, you are my fire, the one desire. Believe when I say I want it that way, but we are two worlds apart. Can't reach to your heart when you say that I want it that way. Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a heartache.
Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a mistake.
There I was. making fun of the song as it began, and then dancing as it got into it.
I might have enjoyed that song more now than ever before in my entire life.
For sure. Really fun about that kind of act is it like tips over beyond inauthentic into authenticity. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
It's just a group of guys that they're like, you work for us, silence. The producers give them the songs. They teach them the dance. And then the production is so weird. Like there's no art to it at all. Like it's just the purest commerce. It's amazing. It's like enjoying like a McDonald's burger. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
totally.
It's been hyper engineered for the people who like it. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's perfect description. And if you haven't had a McDonald's burger in 20 years, you're like, oh, I remember why I ate these.
Yeah.
That's what just happened right there. And I'll probably have diarrhea in an hour and a half.
Did you guys see the Brooklyn Nine-Nine where Andy Samberg had the guys in the lineup and he had them start singing that?
No, but I wish I had. That sounds pretty good.
I will send it to you. And this time I actually want you to listen and or watch what I send you rather than ignoring it.
Oh, man, he's salty tonight.
That's aggressive today.
We're apparently not doing our homework.
No, for sure.
Listen, when you're in a Bermuda run Hampton Inn.
I know. I would be salty too, my brother. You're being very kind under the circumstances.
I've got a little basketball factoid for us that I think the three of us basketball fans will enjoy this question. So in 1999, Karl Malone of the Utah Jazz wins his second MVP award. And as I thought about that, I was like, I thought about how much I could not stand Karl Malone as a player. And then I was thinking, who's the best player that you could not stand or cannot stand in your years of watching the NBA? Well, John Stockton was up there as well. The two of them on the same team was perfect.
It depends what you mean by couldn't stand. I always hated Jordan. I had nothing. I mean, he demolished me, broke my heart.
Right, but you hated that. You knew he was great.
No, but I mean, so was Karl Malone. Karl Malone was great.
Karl Malone was great. I'm going to say the two players I've disliked the most in the last 15 years are Chris Paul and James Harden. And it's not even close.
Oh, I really like Paul.
We can't even go there. Like, it'll be like a 2-hour. We'll have a special 2-hour episode of The Sins of Chris Paul. Barkley is wrong. Greatest leader in the NBA, which is what he says every time. Every time they go to Chris Paul highlights. Chris Paul is the best leader we have in the NBA. Every time.
Okay.
Drives me crazy.
All right, I cannot wait for that podcast. That's going
to
be
go look up the highlight where he tries to punch Damian Lillard in the kidney on a layup in the playoffs, and he gets his finger caught in the uniform and breaks and dislocates his own pinky and knocks himself out of the playoffs when he's a Clipper. That's my favorite quintessential Chris Paul highlight.
Wow. Okay. We're moving on quick. Everyone's a little salty tonight.
I'm not. I'm in a great mood, but you brought up Chris Paul. You know, on the extended version of this podcast, Ben has an unbelievable Karl Malone story, but I'm not sure he's allowed to tell it on the podcast.
Oh, we'll put it behind the paywall.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's get to people who died in 1999. Ben, I believe in you. I think you've got something here. As a matter of fact, we will start with basketball. Lakers. Stilt.
Come on, buddy. George Mikan? I'll throw out some wrong names for you.
I will, Chamberlain.
Fine. Hey! He's in. He has re-engaged.
George Mikan.
George Mikan is pretty great.
Movies. Critic. Ebert.
It's Gene Siskel.
Comedian. Tired. Blazing Saddles.
Madeline Kahn?
Yes, Jeff Simons.
That's a pretty good pull. I can't believe my brain pulled that out.
All right, Ben, we'll come up with something. All right. Actually, Ben, you can take this one. we're leaving the 20th century. Give me your top two musical moments of the entire century. Go.
All right. So first I'll note that Indie Kin Cannon objected to this question.
I know.
So thought this was off brand and we should start in 1969. Second, it is a little bit of a weird question and I thought hard about it. First, 1901, the Gramophone Company first records and presses commercially available records on wax. The recording of sound, and it, I mean, it's a hilarious story too. The dude who ran, the German guy who ran the company, toured the world recording opera and weird performances in India and then released them all. Huh. And then there's a less clear version of this, but basically it's in the late 20s, early 30s that you first have amplification systems that can travel.
Yep.
So there have been amplification systems in movie houses since the 1890s, 1900s. But to have it, you can actually carry it with you, which means basically you can have a band that's amplified.
And
starts
amp.
in the 30s. Yeah, totally. Huh. So that makes every, you know, and then you're off to the races. I could have chosen the electric guitar, but the amplification is actually the big thing.
I like the Deutsche Grammophon.
Yeah, I know for sure.
That's good. I'll do, I have two. One is Igor Stravinsky conducts the Rites of Spring in Paris in 1913. And it causes a riot because it's such a reinterpretation of what ballet and classical music.
People
the audience
freak out.
Audience freaks out. I think it introduces the 20th century as a moment when avant-garde art can go popular and go from the underground to the above ground. And I think that leads to pop art and pop culture. And the second one is the Beatles perform on Ed Sullivan on February 9th, 1964. I think that changes the second half of the 20th century.
Talk about a riot.
Utterly.
Yeah.
Those are my two. But yeah, they're both pre-1969, so I'm not loving my choices a ton. Probably Woodstock, right? I mean, it invents the modern rock concert. It invents, it creates the modern rock festival. It turns rock and roll from a kind of a micro youth culture into something that every kid in the world wants a part of. I mean,
I'm going to go with 1983 when Level 42 releases Something About You.
That was hard to cut off the list. I agree with you.
Let's go. Our three albums.
Our three albums.
Ben, let's get you.
So, in 1999, India Kin Cannon graduated from Princeton with a master's degree, and then we moved to Arizona. This entire stretch of our lives, like basically from 97 to when Dolly is born in 2001, is all one chunk of our lives. And I experienced this as a really, really, really busy stretch. When India was at grad school at Princeton, obviously she was super busy. I worked at a Princeton office of a pretty big law firm. And the last calendar year, basically up until we left in May 1999 when she graduated, I billed, not worked, billed 2,400 hours, which means that I was just at work every day, all day, including the weekends. There's a particular story that I remember from this. May 17th, 1998, my dad calls me and he's like, hey, my best friend David Gillis and I are going to go to the Yankee game today, Sunday afternoon. You want to come? And I'm like, nah, I got to work. I'm just going to go to work. I'll listen to you on the radio. And my dad's friend David Gillis is the best. And I've gone to a bunch of Yankee games with them. And we should note, I'm a much bigger baseball fan than either of these dudes. Can either one of you guess what happened May 17th, 1998 at Yankee Stadium?
Perfect game.
David Wells pitched a perfect game.
Wasn't he hungover?
Yes. My dad has seen a perfect game.
That's unbelievable.
That's unbelievable.
Like 26 total in all of baseball history. And I could have been there. I could have been there. And I mean, it was hilarious because I was actually physically at work. And that year, the Yankees were so unbelievably good, and baseball's the best radio game. So I would just listen to every game on the radio. So I'm sitting there at work and I'm like, you know, typing things and writing a brief and doing some research, and it's the fifth inning, and I'm like, hey, I don't think there's been a hit. And then I'm like, hey, I get to the seventh inning and they're not saying anything. You know, they don't spoil it. Anyhow, I remember this vividly. Ugh. Because on the one hand, you know, when you're in your 20s, I didn't have kids. It's like, you know, what are you going to spend your time doing besides working? You know what I mean? It's not a bad time to spend all your time working. That being said, if you keep that
attitude, is the most time out. That's the most Gen X answer we've ever had in a show with a lot of Gen X content. What's better to do in your 20s than just work all the time?
Work.
I can't even. Work. I mean, you just summed up our whole generation in 4 seconds. Because you know what? Other generations have rebuttals to that idea. That involves
joy, peace, relaxation.
I don't know. I enjoyed friendships. Working. It was fine.
It was work.
Anyhow, this is all a long way of saying that this stretch choosing music has been a little bit hard. This year in particular was very hard for me. I went back and forth and forth and back, and I finally settled on the record I listened to most in 1999, which is unquestionably not the best album. No one will find this on a best of thing. It's a super squirrely selection.
Okay.
It is Looper's Up a Tree.
What?
Okay. Looper is a splinter act from Belle and Sebastian.
Let's go.
The bassist in Belle and Sebastian and his weird art school wife got together and created a separate sampling band called Looper.
Okay.
And they put out a record called Up a Tree. The first track is called The Treehouse, and it's a minute and 27 second looping piano bit with his daughter mumbling about how awesome their treehouse is with a thick Scottish accent. She's like, we go up the ladder. We go up the ladder. It's amazing. Anyhow, that's what the entire record sounds like. Jeff's holding his head in his hands, which is fine. I am a huge fan of Scottish mumbling. I'm a huge fan of looping. I love this record. I recognize it as a weird selection. Jeff, Columbo's Car by Looper. I want you to start at the 3 minute mark.
Up a Tree by Looper.
Just so you said. I'll let you get back to your game. You know, this really is a lovely area. And as he walked off down the steps, I watched until he opened the door of his car, and I went to start up another game, but then he stopped. Oh, I'm sorry, he said, holding one hand up in the air, a cigar between his fingers, and looking down at the ground. Just a little thing, he said, and he scratched the back of his head with a hand that had been up in the air. Well, something like that, sir. That little machine you have there, would someone be able to make samples with that, from records and stuff? I laughed and shook my head. That's fine, sir, he said, I was just curious. Then he got in the car and drove away.
Wow.
Yes, so this is great music to work to. I weirdly loved this record. I don't even know how I found it. I guess because I like Belle and Sebastian. It was number 79 on the Scottish albums chart. That's the Wikipedia information about this record. It was a Sub Pop release in the US, and I just wore it out. And if you hated that, no worries at all. You're not alone. Many people hate Scottish mumbling over looping.
What does India think of this album?
She liked it. She actually convinced me. I almost went with old 97's fight songs. And she was like, why would you choose that? You listen to that stupid Looper record. And I was like, oh, yeah. So I rechanged my mind to this.
I love that stupid Looper record is a thumbs up review from India. Do you realize like how low your bar is for a compliment?
I feel India just kind of cuts to the chase.
Yes.
She doesn't. Oh, that's my issue. If she were here, she would be like, that's just the way Ben presents it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I've never heard that band. Never heard that album. I thought it was pretty cool. Jeff Simons, could you listen to that while you were working?
I pressed this on Jeff for sure. I definitely made you listen to this in 1999.
You definitely did. You definitely did. Whatever. I mean, it sounds like, here's what it is. It's like,
first of all, I'm not going to take any whatevers from you. You chose a freaking box set of nuggets. Crap that came out before the time period. We did not give you sufficient shit for last week. Last week
was I love it.
I mean, so in 1999, oh, you know, we came out in 1999.
You had your chance last week.
Oh, you know what the best album in 1999 was? It's the Mahalia Jackson box set.
Yeah,
which
that was
I bought
good too.
In 1999. You know, I listened to all three of those discs. That's what I should choose.
I would have given you less shit. Here's the thing. This is, what if there was a Scottish Lou Reed who wishes he was in Soul Coughing? Only not any of those things. That's basically what the Looper record is.
Like, you say that be, like that's bad.
I know.
Yeah, I know, right?
If I say that out loud and you're like, ooh, you should listen to Looper. And if you listen to that and you're like, oh, for God's sake, then you shouldn't. Okay. I mean, that really comes down to that. Like, I would prefer to just watch the scene in Snatch where they have to buy the caravan from Brad Pitt.
I love that
and
scene.
He's doing that same, like, yeah, I want a caravan to be mad. Like, I would just, if they could put that under a tricky beat, I would listen to that. For
someone has
minutes.
Done that. We've missed out on that if they haven't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like Soul Coughing. I thought this was cool. I got
There's an old Velvet Underground song called The Gift, which has this like pretty shitty background track where Lou Reed reads a short story about mailing himself to his girlfriend. And the Looper record is pretty much a techno update of that song for 40 minutes.
But it sounds like I could grade papers to that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Music to be instantly forgettable. Ben's pick.
No, that's not what we're saying.
So uncalled for. I can't wait to hear your selection. It's on.
Jeff Simons.
That's a perfect segue. It's a perfect segue because I want to talk about cult records and cult artists this week, right? So there's music that's popular. And music that's popular that was designed to be consumed immediately and discarded, like a McDonald's hamburger. And that's been with us forever. And sometimes those songs are just the greatest and they make us all so happy. And sometimes they're really shitty and they make us all very sad. And then you've got like bands that are both good and really popular, right? Just big monolithic. We all agree, this is really great. We're all gonna listen to it together. Then once you get off the one hit wonder pop music single track and the big giant bands, then everybody's kind of trying to pick their own aesthetic, right? And some people don't care that much about music. And so the bands they pick up on the backside of that are accidental, right? Like I heard this once and I liked it and I bought it. And then there are nerds like me and Ben who are like, well, I should probably listen to everything ever recorded and have an opinion about all those things and then carefully pick and select. That's where you get cult artists, right? That's and I'm awesome. I am super guilty of bringing some big cult artists to the table in this podcast. And I will admit at the same time that a lot of cult artists are overrated. And the fanatical fans of cult artists tend to micro pick at their careers. And there's a moment you're supposed to like and a moment you're not supposed to like. And everyone was so... I think maybe one of the all-time top five cult artists is my choice for 1999. And I'm committing heresy within the cult by picking this record. This is not the record you're supposed to pick. This guy has three distinct career moments. The 1970s, he's one kind of artist. Through the whole 1980s and early 1990s, he's a second. And this record is kind of the introduction of part three of his career that continues to this day. Tom Waits is born in San Diego, California. He drops out of high school, moves up to Silver Lake, and starts playing open mic nights at the Troubadour on piano. Like everyone who went to the Troubadour in 1971, he gets a record deal from Asylum Records. He makes his first record, Closing Time, in 1973. It doesn't sell at all, but the Eagles, on the same label, cover one of his songs on their second record, and that the royalties from that money keep him going.
Which song?
Old 55, not a hit, not a big one, but that's enough for him to just keep making records through the 70s. And he's kind of a cult act in the 70s. He's, you know, it's this kind of broken down lounge singer. Like, is he a singer songwriter? Is he an old jazz cat? He's weird, right? He has a kind of a gravelly delivery. He's behind the beat. And he's a classic scenester, right? Thank you, Wikipedia, for telling me a list of Tom Waits's three girlfriends in a row. They are awesome. They are Elaine Boozler, the comedian in the 1970s.
Of course.
Then an intermittent on-off passionate romance with Bette Midler, and then Ricky Lee Jones. So that's a pretty awesome wow. trio of women. Anyway, in the early 80s, Tom Waits meets the love of his life, a woman named Kathleen Brennan, who becomes his collaborator and his manager and is basically helps him clean up, helps him like get out. He's living in squalor with his friend Chucky Weiss on purpose to kind of like, it's like an experiment in impoverished living. And Kathleen is like, you know, what's also nice is a shower and a breath mint. And he completely changes his sound. He starts using found instruments and he gets a new producer and he makes a series of wonderfully weird, bizarre records, starting with Swordfish Trombones. The most famous of which is probably Rain Dogs, but that includes Frank's Wild Years and Big Time. All through the 80s, Tom Waits is making this very weird music. It's got like eerie theremin sounds and like treated percussion. He's got this bizarre, wonderful guitar player named Mark Rebo. Those records are everyone's critical darling. Songs like Singapore and there's a million of them that people hang down your head, Jockey Full of Bourbon. And then he kind of disappears for a little bit. In the mid-90s, he lets the record contract expire. He and Kathleen start having kids. They decide they want to completely have a reclusive life. They moved up to Sonoma County, about 30 miles from where I live. They buy a ranch, they build a recording studio, and it's quiet for a long time. And in 1999, he puts this record out. It's called Mule Variations. It is Tom Waits's best record. I don't want to hear it from anybody else. It is it's the sweet spot between the kind of smoky jazz singer-songwriter thing in the 70s and the interesting sonic experimentation of the 80s. I think he gets everything that's good about the first section and like jettisons some stuff that I think is kind of cheesy. He takes the wonderful weirdness of the 80s without the deliberate strangeness, and he smashes them all together on a record that's got totally weird, hilariously bizarre moments, like what's he building in there? But it's also just got fantastic songs, Picture in a Frame and Big in Japan. And the one I'm going to play, which is my all-time favorite Tom Waits song, it's the third track, it's called Hold On. I have two Tom Waits stories. I recorded an album up there for a friend in Tom Waits' studio.
Cool.
And there's two rooms. There's the room you can rent, and then there's Tom's room.
Okay.
And when you go, you get like, you're not allowed to like get the directions until like the morning you go up there. So, cause he really doesn't like visitors. So I wind up and like the last two roads don't have signs. It's like, take a left at the tree and then like follow the, but I go into the wrong room and I open the door and I'm like, hey, and all these guys are like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, put my bass down. And I've walked into a Tom Waits session by accident.
Oh no.
I'm not supposed to be in that room. My friends at the little stair, but everyone's totally cool to me. And they're like, oh, who called you? Like, oh, I was supposed to show up at 9. And I'm like, so where's Matt? And they're like, oh yeah. So that's the room. But I was in there for like 15 minutes and they got this big, beautiful console. I'm like, wow, beautiful Neve board. And they're like, yeah, do you know where we got this? It's the Pete Townsend console that he recorded and mixed Quadrophenia on.
Wow.
Waits bought at auction and had delivered to his ranch. So I got to hang out there accidentally.
Did
for a
you
couple
freak
minutes.
Out when you heard that?
I was trying so hard to be cool, but yeah, I think I slobbered a tiny bit. I was like, oh, that's totally not the coolest thing ever. My second Tom Waits story is I fly down to Los Angeles for a gig. And it's one of those, like, you fly down Thursday afternoon, you play Thursday night, you fly back early Friday morning. I'm like on the 7 a.m. Southwest plane back to San Francisco, and I'm kind of bleary eyed at the gate. So I go over to Hudson News to get like coffee and maybe buy a magazine. And you know, it's LA, like everyone's dolled up. 7 o'clock in the morning, everybody's like, I'm ready for my close up, Mr. DeMille. And this dude stands next to me. And he's got like Bermuda shorts on and a Hawaiian shirt. He's wearing an old like 40s hat and he's like all scruffed up and he's carrying a copy of Freakonomics. And I'm like, he's in the corner of my eye and I kind of give the peripheral. I'm like, who does this hipster dipshit who thinks Tom Waits think he is? And I take another good look. I'm like, oh,
It's Tom
Waits. This is Tom Waits.
That's
I gotta know, right? So I pointed Freakonomics. I'm like, hey, what do you think? He's like, I like it. I'm like, yep, that's Tom. So anyway, Tom Waits, here's Hold On from just slightly better record from 1999 than the Looper record.
Mule Variations by Tom Waits.
They hung a sign up in our town. If you live it up, you won't live it down. So she left Monte Rio's son, just like a bullet leaves a gun. With a charcoal eyes and Monroe hips, she went and took that California trip. Well, the moon was gold and her hair like wind. Said, don't look back, just come on, Jim. Oh, you got to hold on, hold on. You got to hold on, take my hand. Standing right here, you got to hold.
You're all in right. You're in my blood and you're in my veins, and you wear my what is it? You wear my ring and you bear my name. That song's got some great lyrics in it, man.
Ben Barton, are you a Tom Waits fan?
I am a Tom Waits fan. I guess Rain Dogs probably, that would be my choice, but this is a good one.
I mean, I'm not a Tom Waits fan.
A little strong. I mean, like people who really like Tom Waits would be like, there are no Tom Waits fans. So if you say, like, if you're like, yeah, I kind of like Rain Dogs, they're like, well, then you're
that's right. You're in or you're out for sure. That's a perfect description.
Now, I thought that was I know that as a Tom Waits song, I thought it was a 1970s closing the jazz joint.
Yeah, no, the jazz stuff doesn't have that same gravel voice. Like, that's an 80s moment. And the 70s stuff has very traditional instrumentation. Like, it's like piano trio, maybe a little acoustic guitar. It doesn't get weird until the 80s, but.
I mean, it's beautiful.
It's good stuff. Have you ever seen him, Ben? You ever seen Tom Waits?
No.
I saw him in 99 when he came back. He hadn't played a gig in like 5 years. And because he's locally, he played the Paramount in Oakland, and then he played the Bridge Benefit, and I saw him twice that year, and he did a bunch of these songs and all the 80s stuff. And I mean, it's amazing. Like, it's all decorated like a circus, and he comes out in an old suit with a satchel like handcuffed to his wrist, and he's throwing glitter into the air. I mean, what? it was awesome. It was like a whole crazy vaudeville sideshow freak show vibe, and he played for almost 3 hours. It was such
a really
crazy generous show. Yeah, it was great.
So I've always pictured him as having the energy or the stamina of like Shane McGowan at the end of the night.
I know. I mean, yeah,
is
right.
Is it all an act with Tom Waits?
I mean, I don't know. Like, he just paced himself incredibly well, and he's got the best players he wants. Like, his band is just jaw-dropping, and yeah, like, both technically spectacular and also super unique. Like, everybody plays the instrument a little sideways and differently, but just so expertly. So if you're a music nerd, Tom Waits's band is just
awesome.
Yeah, it's something to see. Yeah.
All right, well, good stuff. Let's move on to the actual best album of 1999. My pick, it comes to me through our studies, Jeff Simons, in Vermont at Middlebury College.
All
in
right.
The summer. Ben Barton, I don't know if I ever told you the story of my wooing of Helen Plain.
Oh, come on. Let's hear it.
I can't do the whole thing, but Ben, 9 bad impressions in a row. 9 bad impressions in
it's
a row.
It's not untrue. The boy got off to a rough start.
It's the greatest
summer
comeback in romance history. the sixth, I'll give you the sixth, Ben. You know, we had a square dance at our graduate school, and you got two ways to play it. You can either be, I'm too cool to square dance, or you could be like super energetically, ironically into the square dance. I went with the latter. And when you do the skipping thing,
first of all, that was not ironic, Tim. You actually like square dancing. Just admit it to yourself and the podcast people. You're pretending you did it because you were cool, but the actual fact is you're like, hey, that do-si-do is all right.
I like
when you're hopping around going back to back. That's okay.
In fact, I was skipping around the circle so vigorously that as I passed my partner, Helen, I kneed her in the thigh and she went down in a heap. So I actually took her out at a square dance. And what were we listening to? Wilco's Summer Teeth, Jeff Simons, I'm Always in Love. Go.
Summer Teeth by Wilco.
I wonder if my heart full of holes. Yeah, the feeling goes, but my hair keeps growing. Will I set the sun on a big wheeled wagon?
And I should give due credit, Jeff Simons, you were the one playing this. This was the soundtrack of my summer. Summer Teeth by Wilco.
It was great. We saw Wilco that summer at the Higher Ground in Burlington, Vermont, at the height of that Summer Teeth tour when that band was just so shit hot every night. That's one of, still one of the best shows I've ever seen.
And they can play. I mean, they can just play.
They were just great.
That and you've sound. Got
remember we ran into all of them walking down the street coming out of the record store. That was fun.
You've got A Shot in the Arm, Nothing's Ever Gonna Stand in My Way Again, How to Fight Loneliness.
I can't remember, Ben, were you irritated by this record when it came out?
I like this record.
Yeah, okay.
I thought this record was a big leap forward.
Me too.
I wasn't crazy about the Mermaid Avenue, like that kind of irked me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought this was great. I mean, Timmy, this is a better record than either the one me and Jeff chose. It's not my favorite Wilco record, so I can't. I just didn't feel comfortable choosing. It's not even my second favorite Wilco record, but it is. It's terrific for sure.
But isn't this the record where they realized they were never going to, reach the place perhaps that the record company wanted them to reach? Like, they produced really good songs and it still didn't connect with a wider audience in 1999. Like, these are good rock songs. And I think that they were expected to make a leap and this album didn't achieve that the way the record companies wanted it.
Yeah. It's funny. But this is, I would blame Wilco's star-crossed industry thing that chorus famously culminates with them passing on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot,
right.
But it's the fault of the record that we started with. Like, Santana's Supernatural is the fourth super record in a row of the 90s, where you can 17 million copies sold is success and everything else is a disappointment, right?
Yeah.
Like, right. In 1999, Wilco is touring the United States. They can sell out a 1,000 to 2,000 seat place in every major market in the country. And everybody who loves rock and roll has bought a copy of this record. It sells almost a million copies with absolutely no radio help. HBO records an hour long show at Irving Plaza and puts it on their new Reverb show.
Did they? Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, they're just, by any metric, this is a band in tremendous ascendance. The bigger than the last one, bigger than the last one, just ravenously positive critical reviews. And everybody who's a lifelong record buyer is talking about this band. And if the measure had been what success looked like even 10 years ago, the whole record company went, this is fabulous. Give them another five records. It's just because we're in this moment of like, feast or famine, right? You're either Titanic or you suck. And that
you're Hootie and the Blowfish,
or you're not.
Come up short. Yeah.
And that's too bad. I mean, and to this band's incredible credit, they figured out a way to wait that moment out, build their own career around their own fan base, and they will make music as long as they want to, and they will play live as long as they want to, and they totally deserve it. I'm so happy for these guys that they've been able to have this band in this incantation for 18 years now, making records and getting along and surviving the industry. It's just great. Great for them, great for us.
What do you take of the Jay Bennett stuff and him leaving and his, like, this is a Bennett record.
Yeah, so much so.
Right.
You know, I do think Jay Bennett was a genius. You know, I think Jay Bennett was a genius at being somebody else's right hand. I don't know if you've listened to Titanic Love Affair, which was the band he was in before he joined Wilco. It sounds great, and there's no melodies, and the songs are instantly forgettable. Like, he's a classic, right? Like Mike Campbell to Tom Petty kind of figure, right? Like, he can hear Jeff's little, like, scratchy song in an acoustic guitar and just see the whole thing. Like, I see the bridge and the verse, and we're going to add this Mellotron. But I think also, like, you've got two guys who are pretty tortured, who are susceptible to the darker sides of a rock and roll lifestyle, who are both suffering from both mental illness and also just upbringings where they didn't learn how to talk about things. And the lifestyle claims one of them and not the other. You know, I mean, I just think there's that moment in the movie about the making of Yankee Hotel Foxtrot where they're talking across one another.
Yeah.
And Bennett's so lost in the mix of heavy metal drummer, and Tweety just leaves and goes and vomits, like, and has a panic attack in the bathroom, comes back, puts his hand on his friend's shoulder, like, let's start over. And Jay's just oblivious. He's just oblivious to anything other than the mix. He's like, where have you been? I fixed it. And that moment, that 10 minutes is, like, so heartbreaking, because I think Jay had to leave the band for Jeff Tweedy to live. And it's just a damn shame. That's my take on it. What about you?
It was either 99 or 98. I saw just the two of them at an unannounced show at a fancy bar in Soho that India's friend's Judy's boyfriend knew about. And so it was like me and 250 other people saw those two guys play.
Wow.
It opened with Gun.
Yeah.
And, oh man, was it fantastic. I mean, just off the hook. Great. A Ghost Was Born's my favorite. And then especially that iteration of the band, I like so much better than this iteration of the band. But I know that's mean. And I do. I mean, these songs are great. What can you say about these songs? They're fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, there's a moment when I got worried. There's been a couple of moments where I'm like, ooh, this might be where I get off the Wilco train. And by getting off the train, I mean, go from being a slobbering super fan to just a fan. But like, when Jay leaves and it's Leroy on keys and they've just gotten Glenn on drums, like when they're just a quartet in like 2002, 2003, touring Foxtrot and Ghost, and they don't have the extra musicians yet. Like, I saw a couple of really ragged Wilco shows where they could not figure out how to translate the material. They just didn't have the horsepower on stage. That was one moment. And then I did not love Schmilko. I that's not a record where I'm like, ooh, I want to put that on again. And I feel like they're getting back. They're getting closer back. They're starting to speak to me a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I just think of it as a different era. Like, I loved that Bennett lineup so much. And then when I saw the new lineup, I was like, I love this lineup just as much. And now I love it more. Like, I agree with you, Ben. Like, it's one of the best it's one of the best collection of rock musicians on stage of all time. Just fantastic.
They're awesome. And I tell you, if you have young kids, there's a song on this album that is just a killer little lullaby called My Darling, written by Jay Bennett. And I think here at the Hampton Inn in Bermuda Run, North Carolina, I shall play it for little Flannery before her volleyball tournament so she can sleep tonight.
You know, it's been great. B's been playing flag football on Sunday mornings.
Uh-huh.
and I'm playing the psych up music on the way to practice that I played before lacrosse games when I was in middle school. Right. You want to guess what the go-to music is to get her pumped up for football?
I don't know. What is it?
No. First of all, I'm brokenhearted because I know it's not going to be Eye of the Tiger. I wish it was Eye of the Tiger. Tomorrow you have another opportunity to play Eye of the Tiger.
Maybe I will. It's side two of Diver Down. It's Dancing in the Streets and Little Guitars and the Full Bug. Back to back to back. And when I played it last week, she was just real quiet for a while. And then she just turned slowly to me. It's like, this is good.
Yeah. Let's go. She's got the new pants on. Yeah, let's go.
So we'll see how tomorrow goes.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Another triumph, Timmy. Well done.
Another podcast in the books. Goodbye, 20th century.
Good luck tomorrow, Flan. Give him hell.
Same to me.
We'll see y'all later.
All right, guys. Bye.
Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout. And then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Hi, I'm Lessa Gaudette, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.
Electric Acid. Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.